Welcome back. So we'll transition now into our sitting practice. Now that we've had a chance to move the body, hopefully, we just feel the energy in the body, notice where we are, you know, just at that level. It can be really helpful to move a little bit before we sit, just so that we can check in with ourselves. So depending on what you notice during your practice of movement, I really want to invite you to do whatever is most supportive to your body for this practice of meditation. And if that means a formal sitting posture, that's lovely. And if it means that it would actually be better for the body to lay down, that's great. You could also have a standing practice. If there's some need just for a little bit of a different type of support for the body. So please know you're really welcome to practice in whatever way feels good to you. And if you'd like to keep your camera on, that's lovely. If you'd like to turn your camera off, sometimes that can also feel more comfortable as we move into the formal period of sitting meditation. So you have full permission to really take care of whatever would support your practice today. So just allowing now your eyes to close, if that feels comfortable to you. And if closing the eyes is not something that feels so great for your nervous system, it's totally okay. You can keep the eyes open and have like a soft gaze. Not really focusing on anything in particular, ideally not pointed at the screen. And just beginning to arrive by feeling the body. Welcoming stillness. And tuning into the places where the body is supported by the surface that you're sitting on or lying on. You might even tune into the sense of the earth supporting you underneath the building that you're in. As you rest here, you might bring some attention towards the places where you tend to hold tension or stress, and seeing if you can invite a little bit of softness into those places. Maybe just moving the shoulders a little bit or letting the jaw soften. And as you rest here and the body continues to settle and arrive, turning your attention through the sense of hearing. Noticing what is available right now to that sense of hearing. It might be sounds in the room that you're in, or even sounds of your own body. There might be sounds that are a little bit farther away from you, maybe outside the room that you're in or outside the building. There might even be sound far off in the distance that you notice. And as you receive sound, seeing if it's possible for you to experience the sound, to experience hearing, without adding in that conceptual overlay that we're habitually doing. Identifying what the sound is, thinking about it. Just seeing if it's possible to receive and be present to sound just as it is. And as you continue to practice with sound, with hearing, you might notice that sound is constantly changing. Sounds are arising. They're present for a while. We change, and then they're gone. Just allowing yourself to practice with sound as the object of our attention. and noticing what it's like to be with this arising, this passing, this constant change. And you don't need to go out searching for sound. You can just let it arrive at the ears. Just being with what's here right now. You might particularly begin to allow yourself to notice the ending of sounds. When a sound that's been in your awareness ceases to be. You could even bring in a gentle practice of noting each time a sound in your awareness vanishes. Something simple, just like a note of gone. Gone. And just letting yourself tend gently to each vanishing sound. Inevitably, there will be some sounds that vanish that bring relief. sound that you didn't particularly enjoy. There may be some sounds that vanish that you feel a reaching towards, a desire that they continue, maybe birdsong or wind in the trees. You can notice your own innate response to these sounds. As you pay attention to their ending, noticing and honoring whatever resonance that has with you, and then again opening to the soundscape, opening to what is present. Noticing when a sound leaves, when it's gone. Seeing if it's possible just to be with this sound, be with its ending, its arising, its passing, and letting yourself drop any story that might try to come along with it. Noticing which experiences of sound, of hearing we lean towards. In which we brace against. Noticing, no matter our preference for one sound over another, that they're constantly changing. In the final minute or so of our practice, just letting go of that attention to sound and returning to the body. Feeling the way that right now you're supported by the chair or the cushion, the bed or the couch. Held by the earth. This dynamic world of sound all around you. And then as you're ready, opening the eyes, thank you for your practice. Where I am today, I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is Tiwa Pueblo land. And the wind is very active. Yeah, you can really feel it and hear it. I'm looking out my window now. I can just see the branches swaying, which is apt for today's talk. I wanted to share with you this morning, afternoon, evening about the eight worldly winds. I remember the first time that a teacher that I was sitting with shared about this. It was a beautiful, beautiful teacher and colleague, Mary Stankavich, who's based in Southern California. And she shared about these eight worldly winds, these conditions of just life, of being human, that tend to sort of knock us off balance. And my first reaction in hearing about them was just tremendous relief, because it felt like it was giving a framework for most of the ways that we can get tied up in knots, we can suffer, we can react. Most of the things that are tough to handle. And hearing it mapped out like that was like, oh, right, this is the human experience. This is not just me. And I think in many ways that this is part of one of the greatest medicines that the Dharma can offer. It's understanding that we're actually sharing in a really universal human experience. And so the eight worldly winds, they're also referred to as the eight vicissitudes. And a vicissitude basically is a change or a variation that's occurring in the course of something. So for us, it may be a change or a variation in the course of our day, or the course of our year or our life. And it really refers to the changing phases, the changing conditions, the ups and downs of our life, of our fortunes, the regular change, the succession of one state to another. Just as when you were practicing with sound just now, you might have noticed one sound arises. And maybe it is that beautiful bird song, and it's such a nice, pleasant thing. And then the bird stops singing and someone's car alarm goes off. Change. Mutability. You know, our experience is never fixed, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant. And so in the Buddhist context, some of these ways that the conditions of our life can change are referred to as these eight worldly winds. They are pleasure and pain, the beautiful bird song nice in our ears, the car alarm, ouch, eardrums, gain and loss, praise and blame, fame and ill repute, or, you know, in our context, we might think of it also as success or failure. And the thing is that, you know, this practice that we're in is a practice about understanding suffering, understanding what creates stress, what creates difficulty, and also understanding the end of suffering. The ways that we can actually have less suffering. And so when we familiarize ourselves with these eight worldly winds, we start to become really acquainted with the nuances of how we tend to suffer. The things that we cling to, the things that we sort of brace against or try to push away, the highs and lows that are happening all the time. And knowing what some of these are can give us a roadmap as we navigate this often wild terrain that is constantly changing, constantly shifting. And, you know, when we think about our lives, when we think about our experience in this life thus far, all of these eight worldly winds show up, the things that have been meaningful, the things that have been joyful, the milestones maybe that have been important in our life, and also the struggles, the setbacks, the obstacles we've had to overcome. So much of how we experience reality is filtered through these worldly winds. Pleasure, pain. One day there's gain, maybe the next month there's loss. Someone says something lovely about us, and then we hear tell that someone said something kind of mean behind our back. We have a great review at a job. We get laid off. It's woven into the fabric of our existence. There's going to be pleasure and pain. There's going to be gain and loss. And the thing is, a lot of this is out of our control. And while there are things that we can do to influence our lives and our realities, we're never going to have complete and total control over the conditions of our lives. I think part of the reason that it's so helpful to conceive of these as worldly winds is that we can't control the weather. Whether the wind is blowing hard outside or it's a gentle day, it's not up to me. And if we had complete control over these circumstances, we'd tend to select only half of these experiences, right? We'd choose the pleasure. We'd choose the gain. We'd choose to be praised, to be successful, or have a good reputation. And we probably wouldn't opt for the other stuff. But of course, you know, we know that's not possible. And when we really take a step back, we see it's not actually that desirable either. You know, if we didn't have the hard moments, life would be less meaningful. And that's part of the reason that the Buddha himself actually sought a life outside of his extremely sheltered and pleasurable existence as a prince, because there was a sense that there was something more to life that he wasn't being shown. And so just like the rain and the wind in our own ecosystem, we can recognize these worldly winds and we can actually start to develop a little bit of greater ease with them. The Buddha, in one of his teachings on these eight worldly winds, which Carlita is going to put in the resource guide, towards the end of this teaching, this is what's shared. Gain, loss, status, disgrace, censure, praise, pleasure, pain. These conditions among human beings are inconstant, impermanent, subject to change. Knowing this, the wise person, mindful, ponders these changing conditions. Desirable things don't charm the mind. Undesirable ones bring no resistance. His welcoming and rebelling are scattered, gone to their end, do not exist. Knowing the dustless, sorrowless state, he or she or they discerns rightly, has gone beyond becoming to the further shore. And so this is a description of awakening. This is a description of actually living in a way where there is less friction. There's such deep understanding that conditions are constantly changing, that we don't hate them when the hard stuff appears, and we don't cling and get kind of mesmerized when the pleasurable things arise for us. And, you know, this is, in some circumstances, easier said than done. And it doesn't mean that we don't work to change the conditions in our life. Part of the way that we actually navigate these conditions is by developing wisdom, by developing integrity and ethical conduct, by living our lives in a way that there's less friction. And so we'll talk about some of these winds. Starting with pleasure and pain, you know, we know about them. Pleasure and pain is kind of the ground zero for us. We're in these vulnerable, fragile bodies. So how can we be aware, really present with both our greatest pleasures and our deepest moments of pain? One of the protectors against being toppled over by these eight worldly winds is this idea of equanimity, which we can also understand kind of as balance, being grounded, having kind of a wider view, being able to stand in the middle of our life and being able to see and hold a bigger picture. And that's something that we can cultivate. We can have equanimity with pleasure. You know, we can appreciate that amazing piece of chocolate and also know that eventually we're going to have to swallow and it's going to be over. We can't hold on to it forever. We can also practice equanimity with pain, which may look like tending to it, taking care of our bodies, and knowing that it will change, that it is impermanent, and approaching all of this with wisdom, developing a sense of actually what causes pain and how we can lessen those instances. And also understanding where are the places where we get really caught in pleasure and how to hold that with a little bit more groundedness. And part of what we're doing here is really learning to make space, learning to allow whatever in our experience is unfolding and letting it take shape, letting it have the spaciousness to evolve, just like as you were practicing today with sound, letting sound arise, letting it come to fullness, letting it pass. And that's really contrary to a lot of the time what we do when we're either in a great amount of pain or there's something pleasurable that we really want to keep. We tend to contract. We tend to grasp or resist. You know, there's usually some kind of a tightening that happens. And the opposite of that tightening is space, allowing. That way the grip doesn't have to be quite so strong. The bracing doesn't have to be so significant. And one way that you can think about it actually in the context of these worldly winds is just this understanding of, you know, the trees that do really well in hurricanes. They're the trees that can actually bend. They're the ones that can move with what's happening rather than the ones that are really brittle and rigid. So can we actually be kind of like the aspen swaying in the breeze in the face of pleasure, in the face of pain? The next set of worldly winds is this idea of gain and loss. Much of our culture is really, really, really fixated on gain. Gain of all kinds, you know, monetary possessions, having the cool vacation that you show off on your social media, whatever it is. There's a big emphasis on gain. And often that's at the cost of recognizing that each one of us is going to experience loss. And then if we can be present for those losses with ourselves and with other people, we're really going to have a much smoother time. We'll feel more held, we'll feel more supported. There's a story that, you know, often gets told in Dharma settings that you probably have heard about a farmer who worked really hard all his life. And, you know, he had a modest living, few sons, tried his best. And he was doing okay. And one day, his horse ran away. And this horse was the one that was responsible for all of the plowing of the fields, all of his transportation. This was kind of a big deal. And all the people in his neighborhood, in his village, came to him and just said, "Oh, wow. You lost your horse. I'm so sorry. What a terrible thing to happen." And his response perplexed them, because he looked at them and he just said, "Maybe so. Maybe." And then a few days later, his sons returned from the forest and they had captured 3 wild horses. So suddenly, instead of having one horse, he had tripled what he had. And everyone in the village, again, they came to him and they said, "Wow, what good fortune and how amazing that your sons brought these 3 horses for you. How great." And again, perplexing answer, he just paused and said, "Maybe so." A few weeks into the process of trying to domesticate the horses, the sons were having a hard time. I don't know if you've ever encountered a wild horse. I actually had my first encounter with a wild horse a couple of weeks ago, and they are gorgeous and honestly a little terrifying. They are big and they are powerful and they are pretty skittish around humans. And in this story, these wild horses ended up breaking the legs and a couple arms of the sons. They all came out of it quite injured. And again, the people in the village said, "Oh God, wow, you just have terrible luck. This is awful. I can't believe those horses broke your son's legs. Man, what a rough time." And again, farmer just looks at them and he says, "Yeah, maybe so." And the story continues. And the last part of the story is that the next day, the army came into town and it conscripted all of the able-bodied young men. And of course, his sons were unable to go. And the farmer, again, when they said, "Wow, how lucky that your sons were here," he again said, "Maybe so." And in this story, you know, the farmer, he has a level of equanimity with whatever's happening, whether it's good or it's bad. And he's pointing to something really deeply important here. That no matter what the unfolding of events are, we just can't truly know for sure the impact that something's going to have. And so he stayed open and he stayed curious and he didn't make any major assumptions. And of course, you know, in our day-to-day life, it's really easy to assume that any gain is good and any loss is bad. You know, we live in a culture really where we tend to see gain as a reward and loss as some form of punishment. And I think it's actually a huge part of the kind of underpinnings of some of the fabric of American culture, that there's this sort of prosperity gospel that is underlying some of the historical ways that our culture evolved hundreds of years ago, that's extremely toxic and, you know, intertwined with classism and ableism and racism and all kinds of forms of oppression. Because there's something baked into the fabric of our culture that says if you have, you're good. And if you don't have, maybe you're not so good. And this is something that in our practice, we can work towards undoing. We can work towards unraveling. We can stay open to the fact that gain is not always a reward. Sometimes it's arbitrary. Sometimes there are systems at play. And loss is definitely not a punishment most of the time. It's part of what happens in the life. And we can start to get curious about the unfolding of our lives. You know, how many of us have lost a job or a relationship that felt devastating at the moment? And then years later, we look back on it and it's actually clear that there was something more in store for us. You know, some of my greatest losses have paved the way for some of my greatest joys. Sometimes loss is actually what opens the door to our ability to take risks, to embody a different kind of life that we want to live. And that can be helpful because a lot of the time in our lives, you know, there's a moment where it feels like the bottom drops out and we're just going to keep on falling forever. But part of what these teachings show us is that that is always going to change. And of course, the flip side is true. We have, you know, one example, like lottery winners. Most lottery winners actually experience financial hardship later. What looks like an incredible windfall often ends up creating some complications in people's lives. And so we can really allow ourselves to just stay open. And it doesn't mean, you know, being cynical. It doesn't mean not trusting the good things or expecting something really bad to happen, but it just means stepping back and knowing, even when it seems really bad, we don't know yet. The story's not over. And the next of the worldly winds is praise and blame. It brings us back to wise speech. One of the facets of the path that we practice. And you can just notice, you know, what is your own relationship to praise? Maybe even close your eyes and sense into it. Do you really, you know, crave that positive feedback from someone? Maybe there's someone in particular whose approval or whose praise you really, really long for. And just notice what that craving, that longing is like in the body. And then what is your relation to being blamed? What is it like to be misunderstood? There might be a particular experience or moment in your life that arises when you think about this. And as you consider these two facets, you might notice actually that sometimes the praise can knock us off center just as much as the blame. It can be intoxicating. How do we react to these things? And when we start to come into deeper contact with the impact of praise and the impact of blame, we start to also connect into our understanding of what a skillful way of speaking, of interacting with other people might look like or feel like. Those people who we know we can trust their feedback. People who are kind, but also truthful towards us. the people who are never needlessly cruel. And we know that, you know, any conversation that we have with them is, you know, bound to be pretty safe. This is actually part of how we create shelter from this worldly wind. We develop integrity in the way that we communicate. And we try, you know, as best we can to surround ourselves by other people who want to behave in that way. This is one of the ways that we can have control over some of the worldly winds. We can control our actions. We can cultivate kindness. And we can, you know, exercise some modicum of choice around who we spend our time with. You know, it's part of why the Buddha said that having spiritual friends was the whole of the path. Because when we're surrounded by people who are practicing these same sort of things, we don't actually have to live in fear of being, right, it being blamed, being misunderstood. We also don't have to worry whether someone's maybe going to give us praise in a way that's manipulative, you know, trying to win us over in some way. It's one of the big benefits of having spiritual community. The final of the eight worldly wind pairings is this idea of fame and ill repute. You could also think about it as success or failure. How do we relate to success? How do we relate to making a mistake? There's a Zen story that a Zen master named Hakuin was just praised by his neighbors for living a really wholesome life. And a beautiful girl, suddenly, you know, without any warning, she was someone in the neighborhood. Her parents discovered she was pregnant and they were really mad at her. And she wouldn't confess who was the father of the child, you know. And in great anger, the parents went to the Zen master. And at some point in their dealings with the daughter, she falsely accused him of being the father just because her parents were kind of badgering her and she didn't know what else to do. And they went in a lot of anger to the Zen master and said, "Hey, we know about you and our daughter." And he said, "Is that so?" And that's all he said. And when the child was born, the parents brought it to this Zen master who was now, you know, viewed as an outcast by the entire village for what he'd done. And they demanded he take care of the child since it was his responsibility. And again, the Zen master said, "Oh, is that so?" And he calmly accepted the child. And a year later, the girl couldn't stand it anymore. She felt horrible that she'd put this person who had nothing to do with her experience in this position. And she told her parents the truth, that their real child was actually a young man who worked at the fish market and not the Zen master. And the parents again went to the Zen master to ask his forgiveness and to get the child back. And he gave the child back, having taken very good care of it. And all he said again in response was, "Is that so?" And this is one of those, you know, koan sort of Zen stories where can feel a little perplexing. How could someone respond in that way to such a huge accusation? How could they stay so calm in the face of their reputation being destroyed in their community, casting them out. And, you know, that's one of those things that this is a living question for our practice. What would it be like to actually have so much trust in ourselves and our own integrity and so much equanimity that even if something like that happened, we could remain calm? And this is kind of the challenge of the eight worldly winds. How do we remain calm in the face of intensity, praise, blame, gain, loss, whatever it is? So I'll stop here and just open it up for any sharing, any questions from the group. I'm particularly curious, you know, as we're talking about these worldly winds, is there one that really stands out for you as something that's particularly grippy for you? And how do you navigate it?
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.